Welcome to the Brave Parenting Podcast, an examination of the Bible and how parents can apply God's word to raising children in a culture saturated with media and technology. Well, hello, everyone. Today, we have one last interview in this little mini series of individuals who have bravely quit social media. If you have not listened to our last two episodes, definitely go back and listen. In fact, listen with your kids because they are great for them to hear. We talked with Reagan Rose, who leads an online ministry, and he talked about his reflections on being off social media for a year. And we also spoke to Pearson Seguina, who at the age of 23 recognized that Instagram was an idol in his life that God wanted him to completely destroy. We've had such great feedback from y'all about how much you've loved those episodes and interviews. And so I hope today is very much of the same. Today, I'm talking with Lucy Staples, who is 18 years old, and I have the privilege of leading Lucy in high school ministry for the past 3 or 4 years. She graduated in May of 2024, so last year, at the age of 17. When we got together to catch up this past spring, she described to me her experience having the autonomy to have social media for the first time in her life. Well, I was so encouraged by her story, and frankly, her honesty, that I asked her if she would come and share it here on the podcast. So Lucy's testimony is one that is similar to so many we hear. She was restricted from her parents for having social media for a long time during high school. And when she was finally able to have it, she found it unfulfilling. Parents, this is why we delay access to social media for our kids. Our teens need time to develop both wisdom and maturity. Without this world of quantified worth and the voyeuristic nature that is social media. So I pray you are encouraged and continue to be brave and delay. All right, let's hear from Lucy Staples. Lucy, thank you so much for joining us here on the Brave Parenting Podcast.
Of course, thank you for having me.
So go ahead and tell everyone a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, so my name is Lucy Staples. I am 18 years old. I just graduated high school. I've been homeschooled my whole life, and I'm going to be starting nursing school this summer, and I'm very involved in my church, working in student ministry and leading worship, and yeah, so I'm very excited to be here.
That's great. So what our listeners should know is that Lucy was actually one of what I called my girls who I led in student ministry. You joined our group your sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
And so we walked together pretty much, you were like, what, 14?
Yeah.
14 until now, until today. And so I got to really witness a lot of your high school life. And so it's been a really fun journey. And I'm really excited for what you're going to share with brave parents and grandparents and everyone else listening today, because I think it's super profound. And it's just a great example of what not only the great job that your parents have done, but just what it looks like as redeemed believers to walk in this world saturated with media and technology and to try and figure it out how to walk faithfully through that. All right. So let's just talk about, let's start kind of, I don't want to say the beginning of your life, but what was your experience growing up? Like, how much did you have media and technology since you were homeschooled? Was that online? Did you have a lot of access to the internet? Talk a little bit about that, as well as maybe what your parents, how they engaged, the kind of witness that you were able to see.
Yeah, so being homeschooled, we did a program called Abeka where we had DVDs and we would watch all of our classes on the TV. So that took up at least half of my day. I was on a screen watching school, but I feel like that kind of didn't count because it was like school.
But it was a television. Was it so much like an iPad or a personal computer?
And so I would do my schoolwork, and then We had some access to like tablets now and then, but it was very like heavy on parental controls. It was very specific things that we were allowed to do on them, and specific time limits. As far as my parents and the role model that they gave me, in regards to media, I think they, tried to be very discerning with what they were engaging with on social media and online. My mom had a business in the fabric industry. She designed fabric and she wrote books. And so she was very engaged with the online media through her social media platforms. And so that took up a lot of her time. And she's very transparent about that now and very convicted. And I think it's something that was very difficult for me as a kid to just kind of grapple with. Okay, I see my parents on their phones all the time. My mom is always taking pictures of something going on to post it to the social media. So a lot of my childhood is viewed through that lens of how's it going to look for the camera? But there was also a heavy influence on, well, you're not going to get a phone until you start driving. You're not going to be on social media until you turn 18, at least. And so that was, I think, hard for me as a kid. I was a very stubborn kid and a very prone to be rebellious kid. And so I think that was difficult for me to say, well, which one is true? Because you are constantly on it, but I'm not allowed to. And so that was something that I think I struggled with as a kid, and that definitely influenced me once I did have access to those things. But my parents have also been very good in recent years about saying, hey, this is where we messed up. This is why we put those rules in place, because we didn't want you to deal with the things that we dealt with and that we struggled with. And since then, my mom actually quit her business and put a lot of that aside because she felt like she was neglecting me and my sisters.
Wow.
She has since gone back a little bit, but she's being very controlled in how she's doing it and very mindful and putting a lot of restrictions on herself, which I think has been a really healthy thing for me to watch.
Yeah, that's really insightful. Now, I just want to clarify, was she posting you as children on her accounts, or was it just business related? Because you said you felt like you needed to be camera ready.
I think camera ready is a strong word. I think one thing she did very well was she never posted our faces and she never posted our names. And so the three of us went by Bunny, Bear, and Mouse, and she would post that in place of our names. She would never show our faces. But a lot of like little things we would do, like go to the park or play with toys or be with her in her sewing room. Like that would have to be something that, oh, let's take a picture.
Yeah.
Which is understandable when you're in that kind of business. I mean, it's,
you begin to think.
Yes.
I've talked to so many people like this, and I really try to be careful to not fall into that as well. As you begin to see your real life through the lens of what is good for social media. And that's a scary place to be. And I think a lot of people fall down that slippery slope. And so, and I think that's, maybe we need to have your mom on too. I mean, it's a good thing to recognize, and it's beautiful that she saw it, repentant, and kind of left it when she recognized that she was neglecting. Because, you know, ostensibly, like on the outside here, she's homeschooling, three children, doing everything what I'm sure she thought, this is all good, right, true.
Yeah.
She was a fabric ministry, all of that. But yet at the same time specifically, that's what is lost a lot of times with social media. And you guys saw it as children. And that's what we talk about, obviously, so much, is what is your witness before your children? And so, okay, so that's really great. And I love your mom, you know. So I
she's pretty great.
She is pretty great. And so I love that story. So let's talk about, you felt rebellious. You didn't, you know, you kind of had to reckon with the juxtaposition of what your parents were doing as well as what you desired. Mm-hmm. Because even though you were homeschooled, it wasn't like you were not in the world.
Yes.
You saw all of your peers all around you. I'm just going to go ahead and share the story if it's okay with you. When you joined our group as a sophomore, we asked if you had a phone, because that's one way that we communicate with all together as a group. And you had said no. And we said, you know, no problem. I think there was actually still another girl or two that did not have a phone at that time. And so that was okay. But then when you did at one point, we'll talk about that. That became a whole, became a whole thing.
Yes.
But so what was that like? Talk about that. Like how long you had to wait for that first phone and what that was like when you got it.
Yeah. So my parents had a very strict rule. I was not going to get a phone until I started driving. And that did not end up happening. My aunt had her two girls coming to youth group with us, me and my sisters. And she felt very strongly she wanted one of us to have a phone, just in case of an emergency. And I'm the oldest, so that fell on me. And I was very happy about that. I was okay with that. My parents were not very happy about it because 14 is still very young. I was a year ahead. I started school a year early. So even though I was a sophomore, I was still incredibly young and not really ready to deal with everything that came with that and all the responsibility and all of the just the little choices that would come with that that would have a huge impact on me in the future.
It's interesting that you say that you didn't have the maturity to handle that at 14, because I just recently read a statistic. Now, granted, this percentage is low, but by the age of 2, 4% of 2-year-olds have a smartphone.
That doesn't surprise me.
But we think about here you were. You can look back with hindsight and say, I was not mature enough to handle that. Yet we're giving 2-year-olds their own smartphones.
I know a lot of parents who their kind of standard is just fifth grade, which they think is a very gracious age to wait that long. But I mean, working in student ministry for an internship I did last semester and just being around those kids at church and at other events, like they're not ready for it at all. But it's incredible to see like the difference of what fifth graders now are versus what they were even just when I was in fifth grade, which wasn't that long ago.
Right.
But there's such a huge transformation of their personality, their interests, their attention span is so drastically different.
Right. So talk about how your faith, that time without a phone, waiting until 14, and the struggle that that was, as all of your peers, you know, had either iPhones and social media and stuff that you still didn't have, even when you got that phone. How did your faith either help you? Was it challenged because of these restrictions? You noted that you kind of have like a rebellious heart in that. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I was going through a very difficult season, I would say, already during that time of having been to several different churches, several different youth groups where I had been bullied by kids and by youth leaders because I was different from the world, which
because you were homeschooled?
Mm-hmm, because I was homeschooled, because I didn't watch all the things that they watched. I didn't, you know, cuss. I was just different from them, which is very hard to deal with in Christian circles, to be judged by your youth pastor.
Right.
For trying to act like a Christian is very hard.
It's a whole conversation.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And so that was already a difficult season. But not having a phone was also part of what caused me to be so different because, you know, in the eyes of the world, like you can't have friends if you can't be texting them constantly.
That's the lie.
Yes. So I think it was honestly challenging for my faith because I was already in a very difficult place of, can I trust the people in my church? Can I trust the Christian leaders around me? And I'm so grateful that I eventually came to a church where that wasn't a deal breaker. Like you can still be a good Christian. You can still have friends without a phone. So yeah, it was something that I struggled with a lot. And because of my, you know, rebellious nature, it was very hard for me to grapple with, well, why wouldn't my parents want something that seems so good for me? Like this would fix my problems.
Right.
But in reality, it only adds to them.
Yeah. Yeah. But we as parents can be deceived in that same way, especially, and as I've said numerous times, like when your persistence as children wears down our patience and we end up just giving in, is almost like a lose-lose.
Yeah.
In a way. But so do you think that, what age do you think then is good for a smartphone? For, based on your experience, I mean, at 18, I think you can objectively look back on it.
Yeah.
In a perfect world, what maturity do you think you would have?
I think that's hard to say because part of me wishes I hadn't gotten a phone until I was 16, until I was 18 even.
Wow.
If it was possible to fit into society without it and still be able to do the things you need to do.
Now, may I ask a question real quick? Did you have a home smartphone that you could text friends or anything from or call?
Mm-mm.
So there was no access.
No, there was no access.
Home, Unless you use your parents' yes, phone.
Unless I use my parents' phone, that was it. Part of me wishes that they had waited until I was 16. But part of me also knows, like, I don't think I could have fully gained the realization that this isn't healthy for me without experiencing that.
Yeah.
Because even if I waited until I was 16, 17, 18, then I would be like, oh, great. Field day. Now I get to do all the stuff that I was never allowed to do as a kid. And I think that would have made me better in a lot of ways. With this, I'm sad that, I mean, I have wasted literal, I mean, weeks worth of time if you add up the hours.
And some people have wasted years. Months and years.
Years.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that the average teenager spends like 7 hours a day on their phone.
7 to 9 hours a day.
And if you total that up, they're set to spend almost 20 years of their life. Which is just crazy to me.
Crazy.
It absolutely is. Insane to me with all the things that you can do in 20. I mean, I can go to med school multiple times in the span of 20 years. And so, yeah, I think it's part of the, I think I got it younger than I needed it, but it kind of puts a little fear into you.
Yeah.
The day that you realize, oh, I've been completely blind this whole time. Because that's really what it is. It's kind of, you have to have it scared into you at some point, because I really do feel like you're completely blind to it before that, until one day you're just like, oh my goodness, what am I doing with my life?
Yeah. So I just want to add, because I think it's a little bit humorous, and I know that there's other people out there who have experienced this. It was not probably humorous at all to you, but when you did get your phone, you got an Android.
I did.
Which, in today's society, most all teenagers, I think the percentage is really high, like 96%, maybe that's too high, have iPhones.
Yeah.
And so as a small group of the class of 2024, we had a group text, and there was about 20 of us, and we all had iPhones, and you were the only Android. And if anybody knows, you can't add an Android number into a group text that's that large of iPhones.
Yeah.
So I felt really terrible, but we would have to text you separately because you didn't get you weren't privy to any of the conversations that we had over group, any of the prayer requests. And I would try hard, but I'm just not very connected and like super engaged in my phone. And so I'd forget to text you all the time.
Which is a good problem to have.
I felt really terrible. But how'd that make you feel though? Because you were left out of that. And I remember feeling bad for that aspect, that you had the phone, but we couldn't include you.
Yeah. I think that was really funny because at the start, when I found out I was getting a phone, I was over the moon. I was finally going to make it in life.
I remember when you were like, I've got a phone.
I was finally going to make it in life. I had a phone, and I honestly wasn't aware of Androids and iPhones. Like, I wasn't aware of any of that, of what would happen. And so I was just like, I just have a phone. Like, I'm so excited. I don't care what happens. But then when I found out like the limitations that I was going to have because of that, I think honestly, it just made me realize, like, looking back, like, it's never enough. Like, there's always another thing. Because now I have a phone, but I don't have an iPhone. So now I need an iPhone. Mom, Dad, why won't you get me an iPhone?
And if you get the iPhone.
And then if you get the iPhone, I don't have social media, and I need social media.
And then you need the AirPods to go with it. And then
I never got the AirPods. Never did the AirPods. But yeah, it was, I just think it's crazy how I think so much of it is set up intentionally. So that it's a kind of a chain reaction of once you start it, it never ends.
Yes.
Like, there's no going back. And you don't realize that until you started, and then it's too late. And then there's just thing after thing after thing.
And that's why I try and tell parents a lot of times too, is once you go smartphone, once you give it, there's no going back. It becomes a constant negotiation battle and struggle. And it's a part-time job for you as a parent to then monitor and keep up with all of that. And so, I mean, it really should be a very intentional choice, because once you go, everything's different. So let's talk about getting social media. This is why we're here.
Yeah.
not just this, but this is what really sparked the conversation that you and I had. And I said, you've got to tell this story on the podcast, because this is what it's all about. This is, I think, why as parents, we should be waiting for the for our kids to be more mature, not only in their faith, but just in knowledge of the world and who they are and what their purpose is in life and what's important. So talk about your experience on getting social media. What did you start with? Where did you go?
So the one thing that the foot was put down on is social media. I was not going to get social media. And obviously was not happy about that as a high schooler. It's so such a saturated, like, integral part of life for every teenager. And so that was very difficult for me, but I lived a fulfilling life. And honestly, I think the dangers were less there when I didn't have social media. When, yes, I spent too much time on my phone, but at least I was engaging with people, texting with people.
People that you knew.
People that I actually knew and would see face to face the next day. And so, yeah, I got Instagram about a year ago. Exactly. I got it for my birthday. My parents were like, okay, you're 17.
Okay.
You're 17. Like, sure. Because it initially started because my sisters and I have a band. And I was like, I think we have to have social media because if we're ever going to be able to do anything with this and do gigs and whatever, we have to have a social media account. And then it turned out, oh, I have a business account, so I probably need a personal account to manage the business account. And one thing led to another, and eventually my parents were like, okay, but like, watch what you do. Like, be careful, set limits for yourself. And I was like, yeah, sure. And
So you didn't? I mean, was it like that?
You know, you can set the remind me in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, after 30 minutes.
On Instagram, yes.
There's also an ignore button.
Yes, there is.
Like, I just feel like it's not set up for success at all. But yeah, I got Instagram, had it, was very, like, just so deeply entrenched in it. Like, it was just such a huge part of my life. And I thought it wasn't.
It went quickly? Like, as soon as you got it?
It went very quickly. Because I think it genuinely it's scary to me looking back, realizing, like genuinely a part of my brain changed when I got it. Because there's me before having a phone who's scared if someone says something to you in person, it's like, oh, that was awkward. But then you get a phone and you start texting and it's like, oh, they haven't written back yet. Like, this is awkward. And you're afraid of what people are thinking and tones coming across in text. And then you get social media and it's just a whole different level because it affects so many more things because it's who follows who and who doesn't. Who posted for what? The whole fact that for birthdays, people post stories for someone's birthday, a collage of pictures of them. And it's like, well, who's going to post for my birthday? Do I repost it? Well, this person got more birthday posts for them, so more people must like them. No, it's truly what goes through your brain. And it's crazy thinking back. And yeah, so I started with Instagram. It just took over my life. And I had TikTok for a very, very brief time. And I quickly realized that that was not somewhere I wanted to be when I realized how completely mindless it was. And one particular situation where I like opened the app and wasn't planning to be on it for very long because you never plan to sit for hours on it.
You think that you're just going to get
it's just going to be five minutes and then leave.
And see what's going on.
And so I opened it and was like scrolling and I came across a live where this guy was peeling an egg.
And let me clarify. So live videos on TikTok can be as long as however, whereas normally I think they hit a maximum of like what?
Like 2 minutes.
Yeah, maybe 2 minutes.
Yeah. So this was a live stream video where this guy was peeling an egg and it was a raw egg and he had his little tweezers and was just peeling it with tweezers and it still had like the membrane and everything. And I was just like, at first I was like, what is this? Like, this is so weird. But then like, I just started watching and was just like entranced by it. And this guy just keeps peeling away. And I'm like, it's gonna break. And it doesn't. And he keeps peeling. And people are freaking out in the comments. And he finishes peeling it eventually. and then just cracks it in a bowl and starts on the next one. I look up at the clock and I've spent almost 20 minutes watching this, who knows who, this guy just peeling an egg for the amount of time that I don't know how many productive things I could have gotten done in that time. And I spent it watching this random man peel an egg. That put some fear in me. And so I deleted the app and have not looked at it since.
You told me right after that you kind of was like, what in the world am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
Like,
it was a little bit of an existential crisis. And that was really what kickstarted me realizing, okay, something needs to change. Because then I started opening my screen time and looking at not just TikTok, which was my least used app, but then looking at Instagram, which I was racking up 3 hours at least a day on it, which honestly is very small for most people. That's not crazy to most people, but
actually, so YouTube is the number one in time and Instagram is next.
Yeah.
Oh no, excuse me. TikTok is next underneath in the time spent and then Instagram. So more time is TikTok, but I think it's specifically for what you had kind of stated.
Yeah. Well, it's completely mindless. That's the thing is with Instagram, I have a lot of issues with Instagram, but at least you're communicating with people.
Engaging through DMs and
which can be unhealthy. But TikTok, you're just scrolling forever. And it's the most mindless things. And so there's no real engagement with anything good. Like there's no productivity. There's no benefit to you or others through it. There's just nothing good comes from it.
There's
no fruit. Mm-hmm. Nothing happens. You just keep scrolling.
Okay. So I want to touch on, I know we met over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
I think at like Chick-fil-A or something. And you had the Instagram.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, you do have Instagram.
Yes.
And I was very concerned.
I could tell.
For you. And you said, you know, Miss Kelly, I have all these, you know, boundaries. I'm only following these people.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, good. You know, that's good. And I was encouraged by the boundaries you said that you had. And then we met in the fall. And I don't remember when, but you were talking about, and I think this is important for parents especially, or all of us to hear. And you were in school, you were taking some classes at Spurgeon University, and you were struggling. And you said, I just don't have time.
Yeah.
How do you have time, Kelly? I don't have time for anything. And it was a real big concern for you. And I asked, how much time are you spending on your phone?
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you feel? I mean, were you still in the defensive mode at that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still was denial. because I was stressed because I was balancing a lot. I was trying to take seminary classes and I was interning at church and I was trying to manage music, we had a lot of gigs that me and my sister were doing. And so I had a lot on my plate, which is fair to say. I had a lot taking up my time that was good things. But I think it was because I viewed social media as my relaxant.
Mm-hmm.
It was my antidepressant. Like it was what I was like, okay, wow. I just got home from a really long, hard day. I remember like I had just gotten my dog and he was like a fresh puppy and needed a lot of time and effort. And my mom and sisters and dad were great about helping with him. But it would get to a point where I would come home and they would be like, hey, we've taken care of him all day. Like, can you hold him? Can you like take him out for a walk? Like, and I'll be like, I just need a minute. And when I say I just need a minute, it's not like I'm going to go upstairs, wash my face, like change and then come down and take care of my dog. It was like, I'm going to go upstairs, sit on my bed and scroll for 15 minutes. And the 15 minutes add up when you're doing it multiple times a day. And so I think it was that unhealthy view of this is something that I need to stay sane, like to stay calm. And so if you take that away from me, like you're hurting me.
Mm.
And so I think that's part of where the defensiveness came from was just, this is a good thing. This is how I am
coping.
Which
that's exactly the mindset I believe almost all, especially teenagers, but even a lot of young adults and maybe some older adults have, is they, it's a deceptive lie, in my opinion. You know, we just believe that this is such a good thing, that it is a needed thing. It is, I will be lonely. I will be, you know, ignorant of what's going on in the world. I will, you know, all of these things, if I'll be depressed, all of that. But when we kind of step back, that's actually the thing.
It's the source.
That is the source. Yeah. Right. And so it's so, so important for parents. So how do you think getting it at an older age and having the years that you had to develop critical thinking, to develop, let's just be real, focus and attention. A lot of people wouldn't have been able to sit watching that for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
In your generation, because it would have been like, nope, something new, looking for that next dopamine hit. So how do you think that your experience getting it later actually benefited you from? Because this is kind of what we want, I would say, as parents. We want to give it to you late enough that you can get on it and realize, this isn't really what I want in life.
I think, honestly, it helped me now being able to step back and hear from my parents and hear from my grandparents, who my grandparents live with us. And they, I think, were some of the strongest opposition against me having a phone, against me being on social media. And I would get really annoyed when they would come past and I'm like sitting in a chair just scrolling. And they're like, what are you doing? Like they would get upset. And I would get so defensive and be like, you don't understand, like, I do so much and I just need a minute. Like, I'm not on it as much as you think, which gaslighting the grandparents is not a good, it's not a good strategy. But I do think now hearing from them, hearing from my, like my mom said, like the first thing that I noticed when you got social media, when you got a phone even, is you stopped reading. Because I was a huge reader as a kid. Like, it was all I did. I spent all my money on books. I would read and read and read thick books for hours. I would just sit in a chair and read. Mm-hmm. Now I sit in a chair and scroll. And so I think it's very difficult. I mean, going into nursing school in a few months, knowing I'm going to be sitting and reading thick medical textbooks for long periods of time. And now I wish I could go back and change some of the things I did, because it really did shorten my attention span.
Irreparably, you think?
I think it's just going to take more work. It used to come very easily for me to just sit and relax and read. And now it takes a lot out of me to be able to sit and spend 20 minutes reading something.
So this is interesting. You actually had not mentioned the reading aspect and what your mom recognizing that. But I've talked to so many young people, and I actually have even done a podcast about this. The number one thing that when I ask and I see young people, I always ask them, you know, oh, do you read? I love to read. And the answer is always, I used to. And then social media destroyed my attention span. It's like the repeated answer over and over again. And it's almost like a lament. Like, they realize, like, reading is fun. It is enjoyable. It's better than social media. Yeah. But I just can't do it anymore.
I'm trying to, like, get books that I'm excited about and, like, dedicate some time to it. But yeah, we'll see. I'm really interested to see in the next couple years to see where that goes.
Okay, so your mom saw you stopped reading. What did they have any other insights of how you changed it? Did your faith walk, your walk with Christ?
It was very difficult, especially, you know, going into working at church for a little bit, being so present in ministry, leading worship from stage, teaching, being involved in small groups, being involved in planning, like all of these things. But like when I'm there at work, I'm not going to pull out my phone in a meeting and start scrolling on social media, because I think I had a little more common sense than that. But any time at home would be spent on my phone. And so a lot of my own personal time with the Lord was pushed to the side. And like if I had a chance, like I would pull out the Bible app, which I know how you feel about, and like read the verse of the day, which is fine. Like it's still scripture that I'm taking in, but it definitely suffered because of that. And I think there's
sure
also
you have a John MacArthur study Bible now.
I do have a John MacArthur study Bible and I love it. And now I read it instead of the app. But I also think it just you know, even if you say like, I'm going to follow these Christian influencers.
Yes.
That also impacts it, because then there's just a whole nother world of comparison.
Yes. Yes. I'm so glad you brought this up.
Of this is what this person's walk is like. This is what this person's testimony is like.
This is how God is blessing this person. Yes. With this gigantic platform.
Yes. And especially as someone, you know, I love music so much and it's my life.
Yes.
And if I could practically say, I'm going to move to Nashville and I'm going to go do music full time, I would do that. It was really hard for me. There was a period of time after I graduated where I just didn't know what I was doing with my life. I felt pulled toward the medical field, which is now what I'm planning to do full time. I felt maybe called to ministry after I went on a mission trip to Poland. But there was also a very large part of my heart that really wanted to do music full time. And that's something that I'm so grateful that I can do on the side for fun and release my music. But, you know, there's a lot of, oh, this Christian singer was my age when they were discovered.
Mm.
Oh, this person is doing this and that, and they're having these opportunities. This person from our hometown is off on tour with this person. And I'm like, but why not me, God?
Yeah.
Like, what did I do? Like, did you not give me those giftings? Like, did you not intend for me to do this? And so that, I think, was a very large injury mm-hmm. to my faith, that my mom will attest to, that there was a lot of conversations I would have with her where I was just like, this person and this person and this person and this person, they're all doing these things. And I'm not, and I don't understand why.
And you wouldn't have known about that had you not been on social
exactly.
media. That's
exactly.
that competition, comparison culture that the content-driven life
yeah.
leads you to, that it ends up in such a dark, empty place, because mm-hmm. it's hard for us to see the unique giftings and the sovereignty of God
yeah.
to give people sometimes different opportunities, because we don't see everything that he's doing. We just can only see that it doesn't look fair
yeah.
to us.
Yeah, for sure.
So that did impact your faith. And so now that you've been off social media for a couple months?
Yeah. So basically what I did was I, towards the beginning of this year, decided that I didn't feel like I wanted to completely cut social media out of my life, like 100%. But I was going to severely limit it. So I deleted all social media off my phone and I told myself I'm only going to spend 5 to 10 minutes on my laptop on the browser version mm-hmm. of Instagram, which is really annoying and it's not set up really well, and which is great.
It's better, yeah.
Because I can't sit scrolling on Reels. It just doesn't work that way. I can't post anything from there. I can look at the top stories and posts from people I know in my real life, because that's another thing, is that I also purged who I was following, because I realized I had Instagram for only a year and I was following almost 3,000 people. I don't know 3,000 people. And so I was like, if I can't recognize your profile immediately, you're out. And I only kept a handful of people that I don't actually know in real life. So yeah, I purged who I was following and I was only spending like 5 to 10 minutes a day. And then this month, we're only a week in, but this month I'm not even doing that. So it's completely out, which honestly would have scared me to do, to just cold cut, like be like, no, I'm done. But having like slowly, gradually gone down, it's not that bad.
And if we think about, if it's like a drug,
mm-hmm.
if it's addictive like that, and you,
yeah.
you know, there's all the discussion, of course, around addiction versus just clear obsession, but I'm going to call
yeah.
it addiction, you know, for what it is,
no,
essentially
yeah.
what it does to us, but you wean off.
yeah.
There are even prescription drugs that you have to wean off mm-hmm. of, as well as, you know, illegal drugs, but cold turkey is hard. And so I think that was wise. And that really probably is the most successful way to do that without at least kind of spiraling into a
yeah.
FOMO-induced depression, loneliness, you know,
yeah.
what is going on in the world that I don't know about.
I think it's also just, it's really crazy to see now, like, what I can do with my day. because the truth is I did have time to be doing things.
Yeah.
When I talked to you in the fall, I did have time. If I had looked at my screen time, I would have realized just how much I had. And even now, like, as I've been weaning myself off of it, you know, you can see your screen time, but you can also see your pickups, which I think that's even more interesting in some ways. Because even though I was spending, you know, 5-10 minutes on social media on my laptop, you go to your phone where I wasn't using social media on there anymore, but I look at my pickups and I have like 200 pickups. And it's like, I remember like picking it up and being like, oh, wait, there's nothing for me to do on there. And I was like, that's just crazy to me that like, that's why I do think it's an addiction, because it's like my brain, like I wasn't even thinking. It was just a natural reflex, like, oh, I have nothing to do right here in front of me. I'm going to pick up my phone.
Yes. That becomes such a very quick and ingrained habit.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they say scientific, you want to, based on science, I think, you know, God has probably said it in a more poetic fashion throughout the pages of scripture. But the mere presence of an idol, if we're even call it that, the phone, decreases your cognitive ability, your ability to think not only clearly, logically, but you just inflexibly just pick it up without thinking, because it has stuff for you. Like, it's not neutral, right? It can be good and it can be bad, but it's not neutral. The whole design of it just calls you and beckons you to like pick me up. And so we should, as parents, be very, very concerned and cautious, not only with phones, but with tablets as well.
Yes. That's something that scares me, because I've worked with kids for so long. I started working with kids when I was in late elementary school. And watching over time as more and more of these kids just have tablets with them all the time. And I mean, going to a restaurant and mom and dad are on their phones and the kids are sitting there with their tablets. And it's like, why'd you go somewhere?
What, the most depressing thing?
Why'd you spend money for a family outing when you're not even going to look at each other's faces?
Right.
I just think it's so sad that these kids, I can say, like, even though I got a phone when I was younger than I probably should have, I can at least remember a time when I didn't have it. I can remember before that. These kids, they're not going to have a time in life when they weren't exposed to it, which I think is really sad.
Yeah. So as we kind of wrap up then, so what age do you think, right? Knowing that it is, like you said earlier, it is a saturated teenage life is just entrenched in this world of social media. Until more parents actually start delaying and limiting, and it's not so much of that saturated in their subculture of teenagers, what age do you think is an appropriate age for social media, looking at it from your perspective?
For social media?
Yeah.
I think 18. I think 18, you are an adult. You have experienced enough of life without it that you can honestly look at it from your own eyes and say, okay, this is what my life has been like before it. How is that going to impact how I use it now? And you can also contrast like before and after and say, honestly, is my quality of life better now? Has this added good things to my life? Has this increased, you know, my productivity, my joy, my relationships, or not? And I think you can see that in a way that you can't before.
Yeah, especially 13. And as far as your faith goes, do you believe that social media in general is bad for a Christian's walk, a teenager's walk with the Lord?
I think there's two sides of it, that on the one hand, it produces a lot of envy of others, which is a sin. And I think that alone is not good. But even if you're not necessarily saying, I wish I was like these people, then that can turn into pride really quickly, because you miss out on so much, because everything, again, you're seeing things through the eyes of a camera of how is this going to look for social media. You curate your life based on that. And then there is definitely an element of pride of, wow, look, I'm doing something today and these people aren't. Mine looked good and theirs didn't. And so I think there's two sides of it, and you're going to fall into one. Like, there's no neutral. And so I think both of those.
You don't think there is, yeah.
I don't think there is.
Even you went on it to promote the band.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you still fell into that.
Well, that also became, I have to promote myself. I have to promote us as a brand.
Yeah.
And make sure all of our content looks good so that we can have this curated look of what our band is and all the opportunities that we're getting. Hey, we went to this place. We played at this event, this venue. And that very quickly becomes pride. And then it becomes envy when you realize, oh, but this person is doing it better. Because there's always someone who's doing it better than you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that is super helpful insight, not only, I think, for all of us as believers, no matter what age you are, but especially for parents and young people. I encourage you, if you have a teenager who maybe you've held out, maybe they're 15, 16, but to listen to this conversation with your child, because your insight, you're right there. You lived it, you felt the pain, but you're coming out on the other side and you're saying, you know what? You know, take my advice.
Yeah.
Because if you had to go back and do it again, would you do it differently?
Yeah, 100%.
That's awesome. Well, Lucy, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Brave Parenting Podcast. Share it with your friends. And if you could just take a minute or two of your day to leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcast, thank you so much for listening. God bless you all. And until next week, go and be brave.